everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board, where I bring you the stories that the mainstream media doesn't like to talk about. Stories that deal with tribalism, racism, culture, and how it all intersects with sports. Why? Our world is going to hell. Our country's going to hell. And I've helped in that, I guess. But what I'm also trying to do now is turn over a new leaf and talk about how we can come together. And why do I do this? Well, I come from a family of Latinos, and we range from white to black, black to white, rich to poor, poor to rich, straight to gay, gay to straight, and everything in the middle. And when I'm with my relatives and our family, culture, tribalism, nothing like that comes up. Boy, but when I open the door to leave the house, that's all I ever hear. And it's pretty bad out there. So I've made it a point to talk, to give the counter side of it, to talk about data, facts, to bring all of that to you. But I also talk traditional sports as well. And in fact, today we're going to talk about the NIL, how that is becoming a debacle. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a situation that it's just making college sports ugly, specifically football. Then we're going to talk about Tom Brady and Geno Smith and the whole, there's nothing negative or good or bad about that, but it's an interesting case as Geno Smith is in a strange part of his career. He could be one and done or could last in Las Vegas for a few years. And then we're going to talk about a tribalistic situation, and that's Kyron Lacy. It shouldn't be that way. It's not being reported that way, thank goodness. But on social media, that's all that it is. It's tribalistic. And two camps are forming. And this is just a tragedy from his ignorance and stupidity to his ignorance and stupidity in what he did after the fact. That two wrongs don't make a right is what I'm trying to say. And whatever you feel about this kid, the fact that he gave up on his life at 24 is a tragedy too. There are no winners in this story, but I want to talk about how we shouldn't approach a story. Then we're going to go to the final whistle. That's where I run down a bunch of stories. I have not looked at my producer's notes, so I don't know what's in there, but he knows what I like. And he helps me out, my volunteer producer. And that said, we are looking for volunteers. We are an all-volunteer group. I help commercialize and pioneer the fantasy sports industry. My company was one of the top three fantasy sports companies in the world at the time before I sold it. And now I don't recognize the fantasy sports landscape, to be quite honest. But my point is I was always a political beast, and I'm doing my best to combine politics with sports, culture, and I talk politics too. And you can find all this work at grumblingsmedia.com. So please bookmark that, grumblingsmedia.com. You're probably listening to us on YouTube. That's our most popular platform. But we are on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora, under the profile handle Grumblings Media. I ask of you, I beg of you, please like and share this podcast. And with that, let's get down to it. You know, the first story of the night is, well, I'm not sure if it should be the main story. I didn't do a lot of prep work like I normally do, and I always like to order the stories in proper format, but I did not do that without thinking about it, because I just assumed the NIL story, but the Kyron story, I think, would warrant probably top billing today too. But let's start it out with NIL. So we are in an ever-evolving landscape in college football, and few stories encapsulate that than the name, image, and likeness era, NIL. And the poster boy for that today, as of this moment, is Nico Iamaleava. Let me try that again. Nico Iamaleava. Nico Iamaleava. I'm just going to call him Nico. He's a profile quarterback who has departed from the Tennessee Volunteers. He was once heralded as a five-star recruit coming out of high school and the future of the volunteer program. his decision to enter the transfer portal after a very public NIL holdout. That's created some debate about player autonomy, program loyalty, and the NCAA's regulatory failures. You know, so his case, it started out with he had a historic $8 million NIL deal. But that then came with some kind of fallout. Well, it wasn't fallout, just greed, human nature greed. I'm not saying that in a negative way, but all these athletes who are signed a contract, then see somebody else with a bigger contract, they want their share and they don't care about the contract. And that's where the problems happen. So I wanted to take this week to examine the unregulated NIL market, the pressures on these universities, and the delicate balance of power in modern college athletics. You know, so this there's a broader systemic issue here, and this case exposes it, and it underscores what's really an urgent need for clarity in a sport grappling with its own transformation. NCAA football is changing, and right now it's changing for the worse. We are in the wild, wild west of NIL. So, Nico, again, a former five-star recruit, Tennessee Volunteers quarterback, he decided to enter the transfer portal, and that is obviously going to end his tenure with the team. So in his first season, he led the team to the expanded college football playoff. Now, Tennessee is not a known powerhouse to be in there. Now, they're wannabes. They always talk that good game. We got the team to compete in the SEC. Then they get trounced by the powers. But, you know, well, they got trounced again here. But they made it. And that was a huge accomplishment. He recorded 2,600 passing yards, 19 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions. So a nice little season there. It's not what I would call spectacular, but it was. He had a good start there. So he has 3 years of eligibility remaining, and he's going to go find a new team. Now, Coach Josh Heupel, he identified the moment he knew this kid was leaving. He said he was a no-show on a Friday morning at practice. And there was no communication from the kid's side. And that obviously signaled a breakdown in the relationship. When the coach tries to get a hold of you and you don't respond, the coach knew it was done. It was done. Now, Heupel played politics. He said that we thank him for everything he's done. You know, behind the scenes, he was cursing him as an arrogant little, you know what. And but publicly, he said the right things. And he did sit there and say, look, we're not going to, there's no one that's bigger than the Power T, the Power of Tennessee, I guess. But in essence, what he was saying is, we're not going to be blackmailed. We are not going to be blackmailed. And that's what the kid was trying to do. Hey, you want me to stay? You better pay me more than what you're paying me right now, despite the fact he had a contract. So he signed a historic 3-year NIL contract with Tennessee in March of 2022, worth $8 million, about $2 million a year. It was groundbreaking at the time. So one day before the transfer portal closed, he and his representatives requested, "We show me the money. Show me more money, more money. I'm a greedy bastard. Show me more money, more money. I don't care about you. I don't care about your football program. I don't care about anybody but me. Show me the money." That's pretty much what he did. Right or wrong, that's what he did. I think it's wrong because he had a contract. So this was NIL's first public holdout. He showed himself not to be a man, showed himself not to have honor, showed himself not to have any integrity. Why? He signed a deal. He can hold out, but he signed a deal. College is not like the pros. They can cut you. The school was locked into him for the duration of that contract. Tennessee rightfully stood firm. They refused to adjust the contract, and that's why he planned his exit. Record-setting NIL deal wasn't good enough. Why? Because somebody else later got a bigger deal. And that's how life works. So all this came about in 2021, the unregulated NIL landscape, that is. You know, there's a 2021 NCAA interim policy, but it lacks consistency or lacks consistent national rules. And this is what leads to a situation like Nico's holdout. Fox Sports lead college football game analyst, who I agree with, Joe Klatt, called it wild and yet totally predictable. So what's he mean by that? We're in the wild, wild west of the NIL. Greed is going to consume these kids. Plus, there's no guarantee he's got NFL talent. You can be a Heisman winner, a stud in the college game, and flop at the NFL level. So these kids are going to demand the most they can get. The problem is he signed a contract. So Klatt criticizes the NCAA's failure to enforce the rules, stating NIL, quote, NIL and the XFR portal did not ruin college football. The pathetic and inept NCAA not enforcing rules is threatening to ruin college football. Look, the NCAA is gun shy. This is what Clyde doesn't tell you. They're gun shy because they got taken to court and lost more than once now. So they don't want to get in this, but they're going to have to, because the greed of these kids is creating chaos. And the best way is for them to lock down the portal rules, meaning there isn't. I would simply say there is no portal for anyone, unless it's a life-threatening emergency, or the school gives you permission to enter the portal. And I don't care if you're miserable. Go to the wayside. You don't fulfill a contract, lose your scholarship, you're stuck. We have to enforce the contracts, but that's where some of the problems lay. There's no guardrails, so athletes can pursue better compensation. In Nico's defense, what he's doing is legal. He has the right to do it. It makes him a pajama boy. He's not a man. He won't honor his deal. That's just me. That's my opinion. But in his defense, it's his right. He may not have the right stuff to make it in the NFL, so he may be maximizing now. Now, here's the problem. He's going to sign a deal somewhere else. If he's not happy after a year, he could choose to leave. That's what they're doing. That's what these kids are doing. So varying state laws, school policies, it's all uneven in terms of the opportunities for some players getting better deals than other players, etc. In essence, think of the NFL free agency with no rules. Some states don't have oversight. Universities are there to set their own rules, so they prioritize local businesses or existing sponsorships. It's a wild, wild west. So what we need, and I agree with Clatt here, we need a governing body to enforce mutually agreed upon rules. The current system is destabilizing college football. It encourages transfers and encourages disputes for overcompensation. What's going to happen here is I think the field will eventually adjust, but I also think the good thing about NIL, you're going to see small programs get big. Because here's the ticket to success. Billionaires who love their alma maters, who find ways to build these sponsorship-type programs, and they have the bottomless pocket. Man, there's a lot of ego with alumni. And I think you're going to see, say, a Las Vegas a team, a San Diego State team. You're going to see some ACC weaker schools, SEC weaker schools. They're going to have money. They're going to have billionaires who love the program going to be bringing these kids in. That's what's happening right now. So the high-profile athletes at the major programs are the ones that benefit. But that will change again. Just because you went to an SEC powerhouse football school doesn't mean that this other lesser school, when I say lesser, meaning they're not a football powerhouse, doesn't mean they don't have billionaires who love football, who an Auburn guy who wants to get at Alabama starts dropping those bucks. So how was he able to exit his contract? That's where it's a little murky. So these are typically private agreements between athletes and third parties, collectives, brands, or boosters, not the school itself. And this means schools are rarely direct parties to the contract. So to exit, obviously the player has to have a lawyer. There's probably clauses for termination, mutual agreement, breach of contract, failure to deliver promised services, or specific exit provisions. It's going to get to a point, once that kid signs that contract, he's going to get locked in, and the booster is going to say, screw you. Oh, you want to break it? Then your tail is going to sit out. End of story. And if they sit out, refuse to play, the school can pull the scholarship from them. Then the player has to take him to court and beg for an extra year or two. But by then, the player is seen as a bum, meaning he doesn't care about the program. He's going to dump you for the next guy who's willing to pay more. And there will be early on, but eventually schools will realize who's playing the grift and who isn't. However, how close they are to a national championship will dictate if they pursue that player. Look, Ohio State flat out said they focus on their NIL sponsorships and the lobbyists to bring and pay these kids to come win the championship. They bought their championship. It's not wrong. It's not right. It's not fair. It's none of the above, actually. It is what it is. Athletes can hire agents or attorneys to negotiate these exits. especially if these contracts lack termination language or disputes arise. So Nico's holdout suggests he sought to renegotiate or exit his deal. So he's exiting. We don't have any specific details. So schools cannot enforce NIL contracts because they're not parties to them, as I said. They're between the athletes and external entity. Again, like collectives or sponsors. And NCAA rules and state laws prohibit schools from directly compensating athletes for NIL or using deals as recruiting inducements, limiting their legal authority. See, this is what I mean by the Wild Wild West. Eventually, all of this will change. A university will eventually be in the negotiation process. But schools can require them to disclose the NIL deals, and that's for a variety of rules, compliance, team contracts, avoiding conflicts with school sponsors. If the school's sponsoring Nike, that kid can't go get an Adidas contract. End of story. And some schools, some states allow schools to prohibit certain endorsements. You're not going to see a FanDuel or DraftKings as an endorsement, or Jack Daniels in some places. So, schools not being party to the NIL agreements, they do lack the authority to hold athletes to these agreements. However, schools can directly influence compliance because of team policies, again, requiring disclosure of the deals, etc. Why are universities loath to get involved? They don't want to alienate athletes for recruiting down the road. They don't want to hurt the program's reputation, where player mobility via the transfer portal is high. That will change, though. I guarantee you that will change. You know, but legal action to enforce contracts could also violate laws, antitrust laws, NCAA rules. Look, the law is a tricky lady. And that's why you need a lawyer to really walk through this. So schools like Tennessee, they're going to let their players walk to avoid prolonged disputes. And then they're just going to move on. However, organizations not tied to the school, like the independent collectors or sponsors, they can enforce NIL contracts because they are the legal parties to the agreement with the athlete, not the school. And that's where you're going to get a rich billionaire or who's funding the program who's going to go, screw you. Then sit out. I'm not giving you a dime, and you're under contract. Either play for the school or sit out the season. And I think the NCAA won't grant those players further eligibility because it's not going to fall under the rules of what constitutes granting further eligibility. That will be one process to stalemate this. Look, schools are for education. They're not for what's happening now. I mean, what's happening now is a process because of how big college basketball, men's basketball, and how big college football is. Just those two. Everything else is minor. Those are your two top dogs. Those two sports fund everything else at universities. So these contracts are binding under standard contract law, independent of NCAA or school oversight, as long as they comply with applicable state laws and federal regulations. So, for example, if an athlete breaches a deal with a sponsor, not fulfilling their promotional obligations, the sponsor can pursue remedies like financial damages or specific performance through civil courts. In this case, we're paying you to play. Only if the contract's terms are clear and enforceable. However, enforcing these contracts are tricky. Look, pressuring an athlete to stay with a team to fulfill the deal, that's kind of like impacting and influencing recruiting or restricting the athlete's mobility. And that could come under scrutiny. I don't see how it could. But that's why you have good lawyers. And it depends what state you're in. I think you're going to start seeing some tightly contested contracts. Here's my take. My take is the player has got to earn. Look, these are the college football is as big as the NFL in terms of they sell out 100,000 stadiums. Those 10 games they have sold out, every single one of them. 100,000 stadiums, 100,000 people stand state, 100,000 stand stadiums. They sell them out. They've got their own television contracts. It's big money. So the players should get their piece of the pie. But once they sign that contract, they need to honor it. And I think that's what we're going to be. We're heading towards that clash. And it'll probably take a sponsor or entity saying, no, senor quarterback, you're going to play here. Ese. And I'm looking forward to see how that plays out. And they should. Look, these kids are getting a lot of money. And here's what I also fear, because it's the Wild Wild West. These kids are getting all this money, dropping riches on a kid. It's not even really riches. It's like the start, a couple million. It's the start of your retirement fund. But kids blowing this money, by the time they leave college, you're going to be broke a couple years later. There's so many intricacies or nuances involved in helping these young men and women. Because even though the money isn't brought in, you still have egos. Caitlin Clark was raking it in. That was a unique outlier. But there's players. I'm wrong. The outlier players will always rake it in, like the Caitlin Clarks for the Iowa basketball. But you can be at a powerhouse like South Carolina and not get squat when you compare them to some of these other players. You'll get your due because you're the start of the team. But in essence, you won't get squat compared to others. So my point is kind of useless on that. But my point overall is you should honor your deal. You should maybe create a clause. Hey, if you hit certain incentives, certain performances, just like the pros do, you can renegotiate. So that's where you come to the win-win. But the schools also need to have a way to help these kids with the financial planning, the financial management, and the understanding the risk of signing these contracts. What you have is greedy parents, greedy agents, and they're really – the kid, who knows, he may have wanted to stay there, may have been pressured to leave. I don't know. But you're going to have that scenario. That scenario will rear its ugly head. The kid loves the school. It's the school he dreamed of playing. And the agent or parents or somebody is keeping him from doing that because of egos, because of greed or whatnot. So this is truly the Wild Wild West. And I don't know what the solution is because of the intricacies of this. And the problem with the NCAA is their greed is one way. They don't want to work together. But the flip side, the power of the agents is greed the other way. So we're going to have to find saner heads. And I am looking forward to billionaires from smaller schools building up powerhouses at those schools because they have the power to get these players to compete. So, Nico, his exit from Tennessee, it's a bit more of a headline. It's a wake-up call for college football. He calls it fair compensation. Others, like myself, call it greed. You sign a contract, you sign a deal, you refuse to honor it. That's my take, though. Make sure you tell me yours in the comments. But overall, what this is highlighting is the empowerment NIL is giving athletes. But yet there's chaos. Because his holdout shows a system teetering on the edge of dysfunction. I think it's already there. Without fear rules, the transfer portal is a revolving door, as we have seen. And there is no more loyalty to programs like Tennessee's Power T. The NCAA's inaction. And, again, they're inactive because they've been burned too many. So they're like, you deal with it. We're done. We lost. But that inaction has left schools, players, and fans navigating a fractured landscape. So what do they do to preserve the sports sphere? Well, they're going to have to rally for a governing framework that honors the athletes' rights while fostering stability for the university. Some say that's a delicate balance. No, it's a common sense balance. And it will come true. It will play out. There you have it. Once again, let me know your thoughts in the comments. So I wanted to talk about Geno Smith's trade to the Raiders. Is he a bridge quarterback or is he the foundation for another 3 to 5 years? So just a review real quick. The Raiders traded for Geno Smith and it had Tom Brady's blessing. He's got a lot of influence there. So the question is asked, is he a long-term answer or temporary bridge? So I want to explore the dynamics of the trade, Brady's vision, and the Raiders' plans. I just find it fascinating from a general manager's standpoint, you know, more than on the field. On the field is a given based on the fact that Geno is talented. He's today's generation of Vinny Testaverde, you know. If you don't know who Vinny is, look him up. But he's washed out overall number one, I think, or high draft pick. Worked as a backup for a few years, then rebuilt his career, became a starter for many teams, a legitimate starter. He has quite a few NFL records, too. So in the 2025 NFL season, the Raiders got Geno Smith from the Seahawks for a third-round pick. They obviously had to stabilize the position. 5 quarterbacks, I want to say in 2 or 3 years, it was a position that was just causing their demise to continue. So Smith signed a 2-year, $75 million contract extension with incentives, potentially raising it to $85.5 million. And that keeps him in Las Vegas through 2027. So the deal, it has out clauses, though. So after 2026, out clauses for the Raiders, with only $18.5 million of his $26.5 million 2026 salary guaranteed. So in 2026, he's got a $26.5 million salary. Only $18.5 million of that is guaranteed. And his 2027 salary, $39.5 million, none of it's guaranteed. So the Raiders, they created a pretty good deal here. And I think Geno Smith kind of had no choice. I think, you know, his back was against the wall. Look, we know you're talented, but we're not going to overpay for you. You know, your track record is not one that we believe you are the God-given champion who's going to take us to the promised land. You are a talented QB, and that's it. So I think that's how they looked at him. And I think he begrudgingly accepted that. So the Raiders have flexibility to move on. So Tom Brady's influence is coming into play. He's a minority owner. He's a 7-time Super Bowl champion. He's looking to actively shape the Raiders' direction. He talked to Smith via FaceTime post-trade, invited him to his Miami home. Let's discuss quarterbacking. Let's discuss longevity. I would not be shocked if Smith is using Brady's trainer. However, Brady's philosophy supposedly favors developing rookie quarterbacks by having them learn behind the veterans. And that suggests Smith may be a bridge. How long that bridge is a question. We don't know. Let's look at Smith's 2024 season with the Seahawks. It was impressive. 70.4% of his passes were completed. 4,300 yards, 21 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. He set Seattle's single-season records. Now, the Raiders, again, cycled through 5 quarterbacks the past 2 seasons. Smith is going to come in and stabilize the position. The offense ranked 13th in passing, last in rushing, 29th in points per game. 13th in passing because they were always throwing just to play catch-up, as their 29th in points show. So head coach Pete Carroll knows who Smith is. He's reunited. Pete Carroll calls it, quote, unfinished business, unquote. He's looking for consistency. And Chip Kelly, who recruited Smith in high school, is looking to keep the continuity of his game plan that he's had success everywhere he's gone to keep that going. And he believes he can with Smith. He believes Smith can hit the ground running. I believe it too. There's a lot of familiarity, a lot of team love. Smith knows he has his support. He's not going to be looking over his shoulder. They're going to get the kinks out during off-season camps. And then, you know, I actually have great hope for this team with Smith as a quarterback. When I say great hopes, moving on from the debacle that's been the Raiders for the last few years. It's not a high bar, but Smith has had great success in Seattle. Coming from a backup who is seen as a washed-out, a joke, to becoming a respected quarterback. So I really applaud Smith. He's gone from the arrogant idiot he was early on to a mature man who understands life and the game. Now, the Raiders hold the number 7 pick in the 2025 draft. They're considering quarterback Jalen Milroe, Quinn Ewers, Will Howard, Shedeur Sanders. I don't view any of those quarterbacks as generational, as we're going to take you to promised land type talent. None of them. And I don't know if Brady does either. That's why I wanted to talk about this. What do they do? Will they push for an early draft selection to develop behind Smith? Or do they trade down to fill out the roster? Brady is a quarterback. Logic would sit there and dictate that they're going to take one of these kids. Shedeur Sanders, he's a pocket QB who can use his legs properly. Think Russell Wilson. Carroll has history developing that kind of player. So maybe Shedeur Sanders. But I can still see them trading down and picking them up. Or do they trade down and stock up around the team? Let's say they take a quarterback. He's not one and done, theoretically. But whoever they get, if the kid develops quickly, come year two, they may want to put him in to get the rookie crap out of the way in year two. And then by season three, he's ready to take the next step. So that's what people mean by one and done. Then there's Smith himself. And this is why I think they could trade down just to stockpile picks. The Raiders have a weak supporting cast. Outside of their tight end, their receivers are Trey Tucker and Kyle Phillips. Who? Exactly. You know, and on the broader roster issues, 4-win 2024 season, they have other pressing needs as well. So the team around Smith is my point. It's not very good. And Pete Carroll's offense, or Chip Kelly's offense, I'm not sure how effective the tight end is, but Brock Bowers is going to likely be the number one wide receiver heading into this season as Kelly develops the wideout position and Geno Smith creates chemistry with those players. But the tight end is a great position to have a safety valve. Not only that, he's got a game-breaking tight end there. Statistically, the league's best tight end. So there's hope there, but his cast is much weaker, which means he's not likely to perform as well. See, the thing with Smith is that you give him a great team around him, he'll play great. Give him a subpar team, eh. So we've got to see how much has he matured the last couple of years, the last 2 years specifically, to understand what he has and how to maximize it versus thinking he can play the same game and start blaming the players when they don't make the plays. He's a leader of men now. He's got to understand the situation he's in. And that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. So, Carroll, the familiarity with Smith is a positive. Brady's vision, however, takes precedence. So you're looking at short-term gains with long-term growth. How would that plan play out? I don't know. You know, so Smith, I'm sure, is excited to learn from Brady, the GOAT. And he's reuniting with Carroll. But the contract structure, the draft speculation, and Brady's youth-focused strategy is what I'm hearing, suggests this tenure could be limited to one or two seasons. So this is what you call a high-stakes balancing act between immediate expectations and long-term vision. So whether Smith solidifies his role or becomes a stepping stone, that is the open question. I really don't know, but if I had to guess, I'm like Smith's there for 2 years. And that third year would be determined by the quality of the player they have. So, for example, if they got a Mahomes-type player, if they get that type of player, they're not drafting a QB this year. They're waiting on next year's class. But let's say you have a player like a Mahomes-type player, right? You're going to push him to the forefront come year two. Let's say you have a player like, I'm trying to think, a middle-of-the-road quarterback here, like a Lamar Jackson. Great talent, but may need more development time. He may have an extra year on the bench. Think Steve McNair, that type. So the player they select will determine that and how quickly they pick up the game. I'm actually looking forward to watching Silver Nation play this year. Make sure you give me your comments if you agree or disagree. All right, let's get down to the ugliness. Kyren Lacy, former LSU wide receiver and NFL draft prospect, died Saturday night at the age of 24. His death occurred less than 48 hours before a grand jury was scheduled to hear his case on Monday, today, regarding charges related to the December 2024 car crash he was in. His lawyers coming out guns a-blazing. Matthew Ory released a statement. He accused the police of conducting a witch hunt. He's playing the race card. You know, he's already said it was a prejudiced investigation. So he said it was also overzealous, it was targeted effort, and it was driven by Lacy's public profile as a prominent athlete. There may be truth in that. I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows but the attorney general, but the district attorney. But that may be true. Sometimes they see an easy case, I'm going to fry this guy to make my eventual governorship run have a strong resume. So, Ory, now this is what's getting me. People, just because the defendant's lawyer says it does not mean it's true, because that's what I'm seeing it play out. Ory expressed confidence that the grand jury would have declined to formally charge Lacy, stating that the evidence, once fully reviewed, would have supported a declination of charges. There's a declination. So, it also emphasized that the LaRouche Parish District Attorney had not formally charged Lacy. They may have been waiting. You know, we are going to charge him. Because the thing with a grand jury, it can indict a ham sandwich. So, for example, the jury did not want to indict Deshaun Watson in Houston. They purposely set it up to where the grand jury would not find any reason to prosecute him. That was malicious intent by the district attorney not wanting to deal with this case. It was malicious because he should have done his job, presented evidence to the grand jury. Instead, he held back. He likely, this is me. I believe he likely held back. You know, let's get Deshaun out of here. We like him, yada, 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 etc. So Deshaun got lucky. You know, let's see how Justin Tucker does. But the point is they could have indicted Deshaun Watson had they chosen. So we don't know what was going to happen here because Lacy killed himself. Now, why did Lacy kill himself? Well, he was facing we don't know why. But I'm sure this weighed heavily on him. And was it a reason why? At least part of it. He was charged with negligent homicide, felony hit and run driving with serious injury or death. In this case, death, as the negligent homicide shows. And reckless operation with accident. So all this stemmed from December 17, 2024 car crash in Louisiana. And it resulted in the death of a 78-year-old man, Herman Haw, former Marine. Rest in peace, Jarhead. Honorably served. Police allege that Lacy was driving recklessly. He was speeding and passing in a no-passing zone. Look, I get it. You're young, dumb, and you know where the rest of the saying goes. But a no-passing zone? And the reason I say that is how many wide receivers, at least two, that's already happened to, resulted in Rice over in Kansas City and then I forget the kid's name in L.A. or Las Vegas. At what point do you not wake the bleep up? No passing zone? So what happened is he allegedly caused another motorist to swerve and crash head on into a third vehicle. So to make it worse, he was accused of fleeing the scene without rendering aid or reporting his involvement. See, that in and of itself, to many people, myself included, shows what kind of character he is. You know, Daddy may have come out with a cheerful Facebook post, but was Daddy an actual father to teach this kid responsibility? I don't know if he was, but that action speaks volume into those who say, no, he wasn't a good father. His kid, you know, recklessly, which is that I excuse because we're all young, dumb, and stupid. But the no passing zone after you have a history, recent history, you've got a draft coming up that you NFL draft, he hadn't declared yet, but he was obviously going to. And then you flee the scene. That tells me you weren't raised right, boy. That's what that tells me. It's a disgrace. So what were some of the circumstances? I mean, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong. Maybe he was raised right. Maybe he was just scared beepless and just ran out of panic. That could be the case too. We will never know. Perception is the truth in our world. I think a real man would have stuck around. Tried to render aid. Not flee. Cowards flee. And whether he panicked or not, he took the coward's way out. So what were the circumstances around his death? Excuse me. So reports indicate that Lacy died by suicide. Authorities stating he suffered a self-inflicted gunshot wound following the police chase. If I'm correct. So the chase began after a family member reported a weapons disturbance around 11:15 p.m. on Saturday, alleging Lacy fired a weapon into the ground during a verbal altercation. Actions, again, not showing this is a good kid. I don't know if he was or wasn't. I'm trying to play the middle ground here. But I'm like, really? You already have charges brought against you? Recklessly speeding, passing no passing zone, causing another motorist to swerve and crash head on into a third? That's negligent homicide, felony hit and run. Driving with serious injury or death and reckless operation. You have that on your resume already, and you haven't even dealt with that, and you're firing a gun into the ground during a dispute. They said he fled in his vehicle. He failed to comply with police attempts to stop him and crashed his car, after which officers found him dead. Makes you think. And from my understanding, his officers did not know he had shot himself and did not realize that he had shot himself while he was driving, which is probably why he wrecked. But hey, people want to blame the officer. You should have known, really? They're in a car chase. They got x-ray vision now? His lawyer argued that the decision to charge Lacy was unjustified. I don't think so. Based off the police report, witnesses, etc., I think this guy's looking to make a name. He's going to play the tribalistic card. But he says it was unjustified and disturbing, claiming there was no presumption of innocence. Look, we are in the court of public opinion. I had no take on this case. I'm like, let it play out. Then when he shot himself, I started looking into it. And my belief, and I could be wrong, I hope I'm wrong. I'm like, this weighed heavily on this kid's head. He just lost it. Didn't know how to react. And took his life. Again, the parenting comes into play. How strong of a young man are you raising? The lessons you're teaching him. Am I blaming the parents? No, I don't know. But all this starts with parents. All this starts with having the talk with your kid. Hey, I'm here for you. Do not. Hey, here's a number. Call it. Whatever. We're not having these talks, whether it's the birds and the bees, whether it's suicide, bullying, cyber. And no, we're not having talks with our kids. Instead, we're letting video games babysit them. We're letting them hang out without any parenting. And then, it's never your kid. It's little Johnny down the road. Parents have, and the schools don't help. The schools are like, well, we control your kid. We see it with the transgender crap. There's going to be a death one day. Your parent's going to take a teacher out who privately transgenders his kids or does that stuff privately. And I guarantee you it's going to be an American immigrant who's going to, no, you do not talk to my mom. Pop, pop, pop. I'm not condoning that, people. I say it's inevitable. That's going to happen. And the point being, you got schools doing their own things with the kids, kids doing their own things with themselves, video games indoctrinating kids while they play them. And where's the parent? And then the parent not having a relationship with their kid are horrified when they realize what kind of kid they have. No, little Johnny is your kid. And in defense of any kid out there, we were all little Johnnies growing up at one point or another. He's also angry at the NFL. They pull Lacy's draft card based on the accusations. Of course they would. Are you going to sit there and risk a pick on a player knowing he could be in jail for a few years, his prime years? No. That's just common sense. Maybe if he hadn't been speeding, driving recklessly, swerving in and out of traffic, he wouldn't have put himself. See, that's my issue with the lawyer. He doesn't want to take any responsibility. Now, he's angry, the lawyer, because he says the kid did not have a chance to defend himself. Well, now he doesn't. But it wasn't society that did that just now. He's angry at social media barrage. Now, this lawyer, I guarantee you, you go down his timeline, there's things he's happy with on social media that have happened to others because he agrees with it. That's human nature. Social media is all of a sudden a bad thing when something happens to somebody you know, represent, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a good thing, oh, we're just showing the truth, when they destroy somebody else's life. So I'm always looking at these lawyers with leery eyes. So the pressures on Lacy included a negative social media barrage, the widespread circulation of his mugshot, I'm not going to show it, instead of standard photos. Well, here's the problem with that. That's a two-way street. What he's upset at, they didn't show the Trayvon Martin photo of Trayvon in eighth grade. Not him with a hoodie acting all tough and all that. Or there was this one guy that showed, he looked like a creature from another world. And they showed his 10th grade photo. Looked like a nice kid. So don't give me that crap. His vision of a standard photo was probably him with his grandmother helping her on in a wheelchair, you know. So I'm indifferent to that. Now show them both. Mugshot, normal photo. Fair enough. But he also had a civil lawsuit. And he says, well, this person wasn't even criminally charged. Well, I'm assuming, I have no clue, but it would seem likely somebody affected in the car crash. Maybe from the family who had died, or maybe the guy, the Marine's family, or whoever you hit. You know, so I'm guessing probably somebody from like that. So the lawyer is saying these factors created an unbearable pressure and a biased public perception of Lacy. That's true. Again, that's when family should have stepped up. That's when LSU should have stepped up. Now going back to NIL, a school is going to look at it like we have no responsibility. We're paying you to play. We don't owe you anything but the money we paid you. Now get out of our face. That's going to happen too. They're going to distance themselves. They're not going to help these players. It's funny how money really creates chaos. In this case, he declared for the draft 2 days after the accident. That's another bad luck. Shows, you know, it's the wrong time to be doing that, you know, declaring. Maybe have your agent quietly contact teams, keep it on the down low. But you don't come out publicly, yeah, I'm declaring for the draft. So Ori, you vowed that the matter was far from over. It's pretty much over, Ori. You're trying to get your 15 minutes of fame. He's demanding a full and transparent review. You don't really want to do that based on what he did, if it's true what he did. Because all he's going to do is paint the kid into an even darker light. He wants to know how the investigation was conducted and why Lacey was targeted. Well, he's targeted maybe because he was going driving, swerving, causing the man to swerve and hit the other person. Doesn't take a rocket scientist, Ori, to figure that out. But I do believe this from what the lawyer said, that Lacey was crushed under the weight of an irresponsible and prejudiced process. See, that's what, notice, lawyers aren't dumb. They use the right term, prejudice. And that creates a connotation of, because he's black. That's when I was like, I see what you did there, Ori. I see what you did. Now, let me rephrase that. Quote, crushed under the weight of an irresponsible and prejudiced process. No. Crushed under the weight of what was happening in his life. Because of what he had done. Or crushed under the weight of what was happening in his life because he didn't know how to handle and process it. Take what you want. The point is, we'll never know. The law attorney's taking one tack while he's looking to collect. He's looking, got to make my money. That's what he's looking at. Lacey was considered, I don't know if he was a top wide receiver, but he was a wide receiver prospect for the draft. Played 3 seasons at LSU. His final season, 58 catches, 866 yards. He was the team's second leading receiver. And then pro day, March 26th. He declared for the draft December 19th, 2 days after the car crash, as I already said. And he opted out of LSU's Texas Bowl victory over Baylor. That's the problem with NIL. You're getting players who aren't committing to play in the bowl games unless it's a major playoff game because of the fact that they're going to go pro. Or maybe he said to play in a major pro bowl game, but NIL is paying me $2 million just to transfer to this college, so I'm not going to play in the bowl game. Screw that. So NIL rears its head again. But what's the term? I mean, what's it mean? It's just a player looking out for himself. With legit reasons, too, but you committed. You don't care about your team, don't care about the school, don't care about anybody but yourself. That's fine. I get that. But then don't hate when you don't get the support. I mean, how many LSU players are looking at him? Well, this guy bailed on us at the end. Screw him. I'm not going to support him. I don't care to support him. Well, that's not the right thing to do. Well, it's his right. He didn't show love. What I'm trying to say is, there's so many angles to look at this from. Lacey's father, Kenny Lacey, issued an emotional statement on Facebook. He urged parents to monitor their children's mental health and not dismiss signs of distress. It's terrible because parents preach this after they've lost their own. You know, he was released when he got arrested January 13th, over 2 weeks after the accident. On only $151,000 bond. I only say $151,000 because all you need to do is raise 10% of that. In February, he said, trust the process. He indicated his intention to fight. And his draft stock had fallen. So he was a high draft prospect. I don't see how. I mean, ranked number 10. I mean, ranked in the top 10. But among the most recent rankings, he had dropped. But that's what happens when you're in an alleged hit and run that results in somebody's death. So this is what I wanted to urge people. I went on social media as I researched this story. And I saw a camp. The pro-Lacey camp was literally 99% African American. The non-pro-Lacey camp was probably 70% Anglo, 15% other, and, you know, 10% black, etc., etc. And the point being is this is a falling along tribalistic lines. And my issue with that is, how about we follow the evidence? We're all Americans. How about we follow the evidence? You know, somebody called me an idiot because I said, look, seems pretty cut by based on what's been said. Well, people like you, blah, 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 he was, the charges were going to be dropped. I'm like, no, they weren't. The lawyer said they would have been. But to me, that's a lawyer posturing, because if they were going to be dropped, the lawyer would have known about it. The DA would have talked to him about it. That's how these things tend to work. If the DA is not really going to pursue it hard, they would have told him. And he would have told the kid. And the kid would not have done what he had done, logically speaking. But people, just let's wait till we see the full evidence. I personally believe, based on the witness accounts, what was reported, etc., yeah, he did it. But two wrongs don't make a right. Maybe he should have done, if guilty, should have done the proper prison time. Not 3 or 4 years, but, you know, 10, 12, 15 years, whatever it ensues. And then gotten out and lived his life. We'll never know now. But the facts are there. And then we have a grieving father, a greedy lawyer, and social media dystopia like no other. Let's just wait to hear what the final facts bear out. And rest in peace, Kyron Lacey. Rest in peace. And much love and success. Not success. Much love on your new journey that we're all going to entail. God will be our final judgment. Be our final judge. I'm not here to judge this one because I don't really know as an outsider. And neither should you right now. I mean, I have my opinions, but why waste time looking at something you have no control of or no stake in? Understand it. Learn what you can from it. Talk to your kid if you're a parent. Realize we're all Americans. Let the evidence dictate where all this goes. Sad, sad scenario. All right. Final whistle. This is when I do a rundown of the stories around the nation that are sports related. Derek Carr's injury sparks the Saints quarterback crisis for 2025. So Derek Carr has a shoulder injury. It's potentially sidelining him for 2025 NFL season. The Saints are a mess at quarterback. I mean, this is terrible. You know, they just restructured his contract. He has a no trade clause. And a big chunk of that contract is still guaranteed. So he restructured it on the guarantee he wasn't going to be cut. But they don't have any proven backups. Jake Haener, Spencer Rattler, and Ben DiNucci. They went 0-7 in starts last season. Spencer Rattler showed some promise. And, you know, sometimes I think we rush these kids. If some of these quarterbacks actually had a great quarterback coach, they wouldn't be one and done. So, strategic options in the draft or free agency. They got the number 9 pick in the 2025 draft. Maybe Shedeur Sanders or Jackson Dart. But there's also veterans like Kirk Cousins, Ryan Tannehill, or Terry Bridgewater who wants to come back. There's your short-term stability. I'm not a fan with a number 9 overall pick of the quarterbacks there. I think most of these quarterbacks are mid-lower first-round talent. That's just my take. So I trade down, build around the team, get a veteran like Tannehill, Kirk Cousins in. It's a rebuilding year. Focus on who you can bring in the next offseason or the next NFL draft for your next few years or your next generation, next 8 to 9 to 10 years. But this year I'm viewing as if I'm what's his name, say, hey, I get a mulligan this year. I don't even have a quarterback. And to make it even worse, Kellen Moore's bringing a new offensive scheme, so Derek Carr can't even learn that. I don't know what they're going to do. I think they're better off going with a veteran stopgap and rebuilding their roster. Maybe you use this year to get rid of eat all these salary contract issues that have been plaguing you. See, what happens is the Saints are pretty good at continually punting these contracts down. But what it does, it keeps them tight to the salary cap, and they have no depth. Just eat these salaries and use this year to completely gut that team. I think they may do that. I think they're going to consider that. Carmelo Anthony's Hall of Fame induction. So Carmelo Anthony was celebrating his 2025 induction to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. 10-time NBA All-Star and the Knicks' 7th all-time leading scorer. So, despite never winning an NBA title, Anthony's scoring prowess was 9th of all time. But he thinks that Denver and New York should retire his jersey. Man, you ain't win squat. No. You don't deserve to have your jersey retired. The thing with him is, retired jerseys are ones who bring championships and epitomize greatness. He did neither of those. Problem child, his career was a great career based off of his talent. But as far as work ethic, I don't know. It looked like he liked those cheeseburgers more than he liked playing ball. No, not even close to consider retiring in his jersey. Jeff Skinner reaches the NHL playoffs after four seasons. So Jeff Skinner waited 14 seasons to reach the National Hockey League playoffs with the Edmonton Oilers this year. Congrats, Jeff. I just want to give him his due. 14 years is a long time. He has a career-high 1,006 regular season games without a postseason game to that. And that's a record. He held, obviously, until signing with Edmonton. So he contributes as a depth forward with 8 goals, 17 points. He's a utility player in 70 games. So it's a reduced role. So he has a 1-year, $3 million deal. So he's still being paid bank. And the downside is they're in the game, so never say never, but they have about a 12% chance to win it all. They're at a plus 733 odds. So at least he'll get a taste of the playoffs. But never say never. Nico Harrison faces heat over the Mavericks' Luka Doncic moves. So the reason I bring this up, the season's over. They're going to play in the next day or two. I'm taping this before the game in tournament. They're playing the Sacramento Kings. His tenure's under scrutiny because of this controversial trade. They tanked. They didn't move up, and they got a glass jaw in terms of who was it? Here's my notes. The reason he's coming under scrutiny is he was talking about this season. His blueprint starting as early as this season to make it to the championship game. What happened? Last week, Luka Doncic came into town and dropped 45, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, and 4 steals at American Airlines. Fire Nico! Fire Nico is what you heard. And as one article put it, it felt like the guillotine had officially swung down. So they still have a shot. They got the play-in tournament. But it's a far, far cry of what they thought should happen. I believe he should be fired. He got nothing in return for Luka Doncic. You open it up, you maximize your return for it. That in and of itself is why he deserves to be fired. But the fact his blueprint got them a play-in game tournament, embarrassment, and a brittle man in Anthony Davis that Nico hyped up, yeah, he should be fired. But William, they're making him scapegoat. No, they're not. New ownership is not as basketball savvy as old ownership was. So they probably listened to his pitch. Sounds good to me. And we don't have to pay him. And you said this can happen. Let's do it. Take the risk. You got to pay the price. He deserves to be fired. Now, if he doesn't, I wouldn't argue he should be. He deserves to be. But if he doesn't get fired, I'm like, okay, they're going to let him, give him 1 year to kind of build. See what they can do. You know, Kyrie Irving's out with his, you know, at 35 or 32, whatever, that ACL tear, he's going to be out for a little while and he may not come back the same. Though ACL tears are not the same as they were 20 years ago in terms of surgery, being able to come back. Achilles tears are worse off now. Fire Nico. I'm indifferent, but if it was my call, I would fire him. LeBron James honored with Ken doll. Oh, I got to show you this one. I think I have a picture of the Ken doll. Maybe not. Let's see. Ken doll. Where are you at? Maybe I don't. I guess not. LeBron James was given an honor. He got a Ken doll made in his image. Look, I have to say, God bless you, LeBron. You've been honored. You know, people are going to make fun of you with a Ken doll compared to, all the Barbie jokes, but that's so cool. That is so cool. It's going to be sold exclusively at retailers for about $30. You know, I may try to get one. That's going to be a collector's item. Not that I like LeBron, but as you can see behind me, I have figurines. Wolverine there. Spider-Man, Freddie Prince, Ultra 7, Ultraman, Deadpool, Halo, Master Chief, Wolverine. You know, over here I've got the Fallout characters. Hold on. I got my Trumpinator. So congrats, LeBron. That is really cool. Much success and much love for you on that. So Trump attends the UFC 314 match in Miami. Standing ovation. What I found funny about this is Dave Portnoy banging on Trump in the chairs and all that. Then he's like, he's like a Quarterson on a sailor come payday in terms of how he greeted Trump, you know. But what makes this important is Trump's still uber popular. And Trump makes it a purpose to go to these events, to be seen with the everyday person, the fans, the crowds, the stars. He's very good, very charismatic. He's all Hollywood in that sense. And so look for him to keep doing this. And look for it to continue to raise his profile. Maine rejects Title IX resolutions agreement. So Maine's Department of Education has declined to sign a Title IX resolution agreement. It means they're going to go to court. And you're going to see this. There's a couple of blue states that think they're tough, but the law is pretty well set in this. Federal officials are stating who are in the know that the refusal undermines protections for transgender students. There's no court, unless it's the leftist Judge Borner court, is going to buy men playing in women's sports. Because that's what it boils down to. Now, he's a trans woman. Is it a trans woman? Yeah, he's a trans woman. I guess trans woman's a man who pretends to be a woman. I was getting confused. But no, especially with all the evidence showing the damage it causes, the injury, the differences. So I think, and this is one of those 80, 90, 20, 10 rules, stances, you know. So this is costing these politicians a potential career. Then there's Susan Collins. You know, Collins calls for fairness. This woman, it's like, pick a side, you loser. You talk about a grift. This is one of the worst senators we've had in the history of the Senate. Just retire. Get the bleep out of here. You moron. You useless excuse for a human being. No, I don't like her. She's a pathetic excuse for a representative of the people. I haven't left it yet. Men win women's pool championship. I mentioned this last week, but the results of who won hadn't come in yet. Two male-born players, Harriet Haynes, who I will call Harry Haynes, and Lynn Pinches, who I guess I could call Lynn, took the two top spots in women's professional pool tournament. Haynes, ranked number 6, won the 2024 Women's 8-Ball Championship. So two women were in the finals, two men were in the finals for the women's pool championship. You can't make this stuff up. Western world is dying. A slow death. I'm not done. Former Bud Light exec joins LIV Golf. Elisa Heinerscheid, Elisa the idiot. She's a former Bud Light marketing VP that destroyed Bud Light, that actually destroyed the aspects of the company stock market or stock price for a while. It's the brilliant moron who came up with the Dylan Mulvaney campaign that led to 1.4 billion sales drop for Bud Light. Get out of here is what they eventually said. But you idiots are the one who allowed her to do it. So they're hiring her, LIV Golf, to leverage her marketing expertise. This is a Saudi-backed tour. This is a woman who doesn't believe in equality, but equity. I don't see this ending well. I mean, she's obviously slept her way to the job, or she knows somebody at the job. I'm not saying she slept her way. I'm just saying that's a possibility, because how does somebody as incompetent as her get that job? All right. Let's close it out with another death, the tragic death of Octavio Dotel in a nightclub collapse. So former MLB pitcher Octavio Dotel and others were killed in a catastrophic nightclub roof collapse. He's 51, 15-year veteran, 13 MLB teams, 2011 World Series title. He also died alongside Tony Blanco, who played briefly, a first baseman, played briefly for the 2005 Washington Nationals. And it was at a merengue concert. It's dance style. That's the more hip merengue is more hip, salsa is more traditional. I'm Latino, I know there's gonna plenty of merengue and salsa events. And I've seen it happen. You see the small place, we're at a small place, so you know, boom, it's overflowing, like easily double the capacity. And it was in the barrio. Lucky it wasn't more floors, it was more open. But it's like these things quickly get popular, they quickly get flooded with people. There, a lot of them, let's just put it this way, the codes for building and maintaining aren't like they are here in the U.S. We go overboard here in the U.S., but they have no laws or rules there. I'm not saying they may, but they tend not to be as strong as the ones here. So at least 124 people were killed. And that also includes Nelsy Cruz, the governor of the Northwestern province of Monte Cristi, and sister of seven-time MLB All-Star Nelson Cruz. At least 255 more people were injured. My thoughts are with the family of those who lost loved ones, as well as those who were injured. I've not been there, but I've been in similar situations where you're like, ooh, is this going to hold up? And you assume it will, because you're like, eh, they wouldn't build this without being able to stand up to all with all these people, but they do. There you have it, my friends. There you have it. Do not forget the bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. You'll find this podcast, my Fired Up podcast, which is my political podcast, my Fired Up California podcast. I live in California. I'm involved in politics in California. I give you the ugly truth. And then my pop culture podcast, The Red, White, and Rude, where I talk all things culture. All of it's touched with politics. That's my baby now. But make sure you like and share this podcast. Without your help in sharing it, it's not going to grow or go far. And make sure you give me your comments, what you like, what you didn't like. I will respond. And do not forget, you can also find us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, under the handle Grumblings Media. I hope you enjoy the show. Until next week, I am William Del Pilar. This is Points on the Board, and I bid you adieu, my friends.